him, and we just met
at
8 o'clock, and he told me, you go to the FTC meeting, and I'm taking care of the call. So how are you doing?
Fine, thanks, Philip. Yeah. How are you? How's Nicole?
Oh, very well. We just moved 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it was a pretty we're glad now we get everything together. You know, if two different households move together with all the stuff you collect in the last 10 years or 15.
She told me that you were moving, and I thought it was over already.
No, it was in January. So hopefully next time you're in Germany, we have a nice place we can invite you to.
Oh, lovely, Philip. Give her my love.
I will do so. She says
will
hello,
she come
too.
To Rio?
I don't think so, because she thinks that in Rio it's not really, you know, for her, not being too involved in the internet the whole day, it's not the best place for her as a woman to run around by herself. So she rather comes to Montreal, I think.
Ah, good.
Okay, Glenn.
Okay, thank you, Philip.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much.
Bye. Hello, Glenn. It's Jeff Newman.
And Louis.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello, how are you?
And Louis Tuton.
Hello, Louis.
And
hi, Louis. It's Bruce Tonkin joining.
Hi, Bruce.
Hello. May I have two words with you before we start?
Yes,
you may. I've just sent out the vote as it came off the automatic machine, as you will probably understand very well. Since it is highly automatic and very efficient, it produces the votes as they are. So there were 12 people, in fact, who voted, but 13 because one person lost their ballot. The two abstentions didn't come out because they were badly voted. And then there were two people that did not vote. So that is why on the actual sheet that you will get from the machine, it's different from what I'm going to say. I'm sure you understand, don't you?
Okay, yep. So you'll basically announce the way each person voted, will you?
Yes, okay.
Yep.
This is Gary here with a point of order. I don't know if the meeting's been convened yet. But, I didn't hear. I just joined. But
Tony Harris just joined.
Okay. Is it true that we need to verify the way we voted?
That's correct, yes.
Does this mean that people whose votes may not have, for whatever reason, been recorded, get a chance to put their votes on record? Or does the receipt of an email ballot is the receipt of an email ballot a prerequisite to the ability to participate in the ratification round?
My view on this, Carrie, is that the email voting is basically a mechanism to save time. Now, if somebody hasn't been able to vote or record their vote, I don't see any problem in them recording their vote before we ratify the result.
Yeah, this is Roger Cotretti. I just joined too. Bruce, I would agree with that. I think the real vote is the one that the council took when it's inception, and the email vote was facilitate that, but the real vote is when they vote.
Roger, could you speak up a little bit? I have a little problem to hear you.
I was just agreeing.
Thank you to Roger.
Yeah, I was just agreeing with Bruce Tonkin in saying that I think that the real vote in the council is the one that takes place when the council is meeting, not the online vote, so that I can't imagine somebody not being able to vote when they're present at the council meeting.
Good morning. This is Ken Stubbs. Can you hear me all right?
Perfect, Ken.
Yeah. By the way, Roger and Bruce are both right, because in previous experiences, we've had situations where someone either has had not had the opportunity of voting or missed the voting deadline, and the ratification process allows somebody the opportunity of voting in. Louis actually stepped in that time, Roger, if you remember.
Hi, it's Marilyn. Sorry I'm late.
Yeah, good morning, it's Jordan. I just joined the call as well.
Good morning. Good morning. It's Laurence. I just joined as well.
Thomas Questlow, the same. Hello.
Glenn?
Yes, Ken?
I'm on a mobile. I'm in my room in a hotel in Washington. I think there's a way of muting. Do you remember whether you press *6 or something like that? Does someone know?
Bruce, do you know?
This is Tom. Up my head.
Sorry, I'll find out for you, Ken.
Thank you very much.
in, Glenn, if you go to the conference site, it actually has instructions on how to do all that.
Okay, fine.
My line got cut off for some reason there, so I missed what you were saying, Roger, but I gather that you were agreeing that basically the actual vote is occurring at this meeting.
Absolutely, yes.
I was also agreeing, Bruce, because I remember from previous circumstances the actual vote is at the meeting itself. So if someone misses a deadline in the vote, they can still cast their vote at the actual meeting, and it would be legitimate. Louis actually gave us an opinion on that once before.
Yeah, but one of the other things, it's not a subtle point, if someone has voted in one direction, they may not change that vote during the ratification. It's if a vote was not recorded by virtue of some technical whatever that might be, there is still opportunity to submit the vote. But it's not a vote from scratch, if my recollection is correct.
Preference, yes, that's right, Carrie. Otherwise, we're not any more voting.
Yeah, I believe one of the votes we had before was either, I can't remember who the Names Council rep is from New Zealand. I think it's Grant, but I'm not certain. I think Grant missed the time deadline, but was still able to cast his vote at the Names Council meeting.
Okay. I just want to determine whether we have quorum at this stage. Glenn, do you have a list of people that have dialed in so far?
I've got for Antonio Harris, yourself, Kerry Karp, Chun, Ken Stubbs, Laurence, Marilyn, Philip Ramsey, and Roger Cuschetti. Have I missed someone?
Yeah, Jordan.
Jordan, that's right. And with you, we are 10. And then we have two outside participants so far. I think Jeff Newman and Thomas Risley. Is that right? Or is anybody else?
I'm here too, Glenn.
Who's that?
Louis.
Oh, Louis. Yes, sorry, Louis. I take you as part of... Thank you, yes.
Louis, did you hear the portion of this discussion where we were invoking your name?
Yes, I was keeping quiet because Ken recalled to my memory the circumstances of the last time I had to intervene, and I certainly don't want to have to do that again.
Okay. Our collective memories of that incident reasonable to a first degree of approximation?
Actually, I'm not certain that technically speaking, the assertion you last made, Carrie, is correct. I think indeed, the official vote is the vote at the meeting. But I would certainly expect that blatant changing of the vote and thereby subverting the email system would result in peer anger.
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah, it's not a documented process, Carrie. I just want to get the meeting started because we do have a big agenda today. The agenda as it is so far, the first item is ratifying the email vote. The second is transfers, then who is, then a report on the budget. There's a resolution to be voted on there. Then there's the procedure to elect the GNSO board seats, and we need to agree to that procedure before it starts. And that's it. Now, is everyone happy with that as an agenda? Okay.
May I say something? There was a request that came via email from Rashika to discuss her dissenting opinion on the Who Is report.
We'll do that when we get to the Who Is report.
Fine.
May I ask one more question? Glenn, did you get the instructions on muting your call?
No, sorry, I didn't, Ken. I'm just
okay, fine.
Back here.
That's all right. I think I might be able to do it here. Go ahead, Bruce. I'm sorry.
I think it's *6.
Bruce, just to make sure that you understood the import of Glenn's last question, as I understand it, Rashika is not a council member?
That's quite right, Louis.
I'm actually on the call, Glenn. Just Yeah, but the discussion will be dealt with as part of the discussion on the task force report, and the minority report is included in that task force report.
And Bruce, this is Marilyn, if I might, as Co-Chair Tony is on as well. We did invite the task force members of both the WHOIS task force and the transfers task force to be available to take questions or respond as needed, just so everyone's aware of that, because I think that may have not been obvious to all the council members, and I wanted to be sure they were aware of it.
Thank you, Marilyn. The first topic of the meeting is to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Do I have a proposer for the minutes of the last meeting?
Yeah, so moved. This is Ken Stubbs. I move we accept the minutes of the last meeting.
Okay, do I have a seconder for that?
Yes, Laurence.
Okay, all those in favour of accepting the minutes of the last meeting say aye.
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 Anyone against the minutes? Okay, I note that the minutes have been passed. The next item on the agenda is...
Hi, Greg Ruth joining.
Thank you, Greg.
Greg Ruth, yes, thank you.
The next item on the agenda is ratifying the email vote. I have a question for Louis on how we should record this vote. I've had a look at the ICANN bylaws, and there's two sections that relate to voting. There's one section that refers to, this is section 3, GNSO Council, Part 8, and it says a majority of the total number of GNSO Council members then in office shall constitute a quorum, and the act of a majority of the members present at that meeting shall be the act of the council. Now, it's talking about members there rather than votes in that section. Now, does that mean that we are counting at this stage the number of members that have voted for the resolution? Or do we, in addition, need to count the number of...
You need to vote it according to the votes. And
yes.
Under the current version of the bylaws, you need to count the quorum based on heads. I said current there because Philip kindly raised a related issue in another part of the bylaws, which is likely to be corrected in the near future.
Okay, yeah, because there is a bit of an inconsistency, because further down under the section of constituencies, it talks about number of votes being cast.
And that is applicable here.
Yeah, okay. So we will...
First you should determine whether you have a quorum by determining how many members are participating in the vote, and then you should count the votes.
Okay. We have a quorum in the number of members that have participated in the vote, and we have a quorum on this call today. I'll just get Glenn to read out the votes so far, and then if anyone has not had the chance yet to vote, we'll also record that vote at this stage. So, Glenn, would you like just to read the votes so far?
Yes. Antonio Harris in favour, Bruce Tonkin in favour, Kerry Karp in favour, Ellen Shankman voted by normal email because she lost her ballot and it was in favour, Eric Irat in favour, Chan's ballot was badly filled in so did not come through, but in fact he told me that he abstained and gave reason for his abstention. Grant Forsyth voted in favour, Greg Ruth in favour, Harold felt there was no vote registered, Jordan Buchanan no vote registered, Ken Stubbs voted in favour, Lawrence Juliakin voted in favour, Marilyn Cade voted in favour, Philip Shepherd voted in favour, Philip Grabmazer voted in favour, Roger Coschetti, his ballot was also refused by the system, but in fact it was an abstention, but I did not get an explanation, and Tony Holmes voted in favour.
Okay, now Jordan, you're on the call. Do you wish to register a vote on this resolution?
Yes, I'd be glad to vote in favour of the resolution at this time.
So that makes then 14 in favour, Bruce.
I'm sorry, what was Jordan's vote?
In favour.
OK. Okay, by my reckoning, we have 14 people that have voted in favour. So we have 14 members in favour. In terms of the registrars and registry voting members have two votes each. So we have, let's see, one, two... I think we have, is it right that we have 19 votes in favour?
Actually, Bruce, I have a question of Louis on that count. On that question.
Yeah, go ahead, Marilyn, ask the question.
It may be the same. Louis, the way the voting arrangement now exists, should we assume that for all votes and all acts of the council when a vote is needed, that the vote would be counted as two votes for each of the registrar representatives and one vote for each other council?
Yes, the vote should be equalized for all votes. Bruce, is it easy for you to do that? Just double the registry and registrar votes.
So there were five votes in favour from the registry and registrar, so that's a total of 10 votes. And then there were nine other members that voted, so we have a total of 19 votes cast out of a maximum possible number of votes of 20. So we will record the motion as carried, but what we also need to do is to ratify this the vote, and so I'd just like to get all those that confirm the votes are cast as stated by Glenn. All those in favour say aye.
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 Ed, again?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any against the motion? Okay, any abstentions?
Abstain. This is Roger.
Okay, so you're ratifying the vote for... Okay, we'll record Roger as abstaining. So we will formally record in the minutes that the vote has been... the motion has been carried by 14 members and 19
votes. Bruce?
Yes?
I'm sorry to bother you, but I believe that Sean also spoke out at the same time Roger did. Please correct me if I'm wrong, folks.
Chun, did you register an abstention on ratifying the vote?
Yeah, abstain.
Okay, we have two abstentions on ratifying the vote. Okay, moving on to the next item of the agenda, which is on the topic of transfers. At our last meeting it was two meetings ago in December, it was decided to form a transfers implementation committee to consider the recommendations of the transfers task force and consider whether they were implementable. The implementation committee reported that they were implementable, but suggested a number of improvements to the wording to make them more easily implementable. Subsequent to that, the Transfer Task Force has reviewed that implementation committee report and made some minor to Transfer Task Force report. I'll hand it over to Marilyn, chair of that Transfer Task Force, just to summarise the current status of that report.
Thank you, and I think we may have members of the task force on the call with us. Can I just ask if you're on the call and you're a member of the Transfers Task Force, if you identify yourself?
Ross Reeder's here, Marilyn.
Thank you.
Jeff Newman's here.
Great. I bring Grant Forsyth's apologies. He had intended to join, but may still be joining late, and several of the other members had indicated they would not be able to join. The status of the report is that we have taken the, we received the implementation committee's report and have reviewed it in great detail, and the report that is before the council now has a chart in it which takes all of the input from the implementation committee and identifies what the suggested change is. We then took those changes and accepted them in, I think there might have been one or two situations where we provided a small amount of wording change, but they were accepted and they are embedded in the version of the report that you have in front of you in a redline copy so that you can see that what the change is in wording. For the most part, the Transfers Task Force believes that the improvements made to the suggested wording and the consensus recommendations of the Transfers Task Force through the addition of the work of the Implementation Committee is just has really helped to strengthen and to clarify the recommendations that the Transfers Task Force had forward and that were previously approved by this council. There's a couple of places where there was like a duplication of a word, and in embedding the language of the implementation committee into the report, that was edited out. But other than that, there was a very the recommendations of the implementation committee are both welcomed and integrated into the task force report. The report that's for you now is the final report that is ready to be sent to, after approval, final approval by the I guess it's acceptance by the council, ready to be forward to the board. And I think at that point I would just stop and ask people if they have questions, and note that a couple of the task force members who are quite expert in this are available to help respond to questions as well.
Okay, are there any questions of the Transfers Task Force report at this stage?
It's Laurence. I have just one question on the process. I just would like to know if the task force received comments, input from any constituencies or any formal input from the constituencies or not.
I'm sorry, Laurence. You mean at what stage? Because we have received...
Since the last month, in fact.
There were no contributions. The report was approved by council, if you recall, in Amsterdam.
Yes, since Amsterdam, I mean.
We have not received subsequent new inputs from constituencies, other than the input that was received through the implementation process.
Mm-hmm.
And the implementation process, if you recall, maybe it's helpful to just remind everyone, the implementation committee was comprised of registries and registrars and three user representatives.
Yeah.
And there was a representative of the business constituency, Grant Forsyth, and a representative of the IPC, David Safran, and I am blanking on our third representative. Bruce, maybe we had only two?
I think we only had two, yes.
We had
two members from the task force,
right,
which were Grant and David, to my memory. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Marilyn.
Any other questions?
This is Roger. But Marilyn, you indicated that there were only minor aspects of the implementation group's recommendations that were not incorporated. Could you just explain what they are so we're clear on what, if anything, was not included from the implementation group?
Roger, let me point something out to everyone in the committee, and thank Roger for giving me the opportunity to do that. The task force tried, we have spent an incredible amount of time on this, and I want to express my appreciation to the representatives from the constituencies who worked on this over several months in great detail, preparing not only reports, but taking input, sitting through endless hours of conference calls and preparing documents. And in the end, in order to make it easier for the council, they took one more step, which we hope will make it easier for you, by preparing a chart for you. And I know that we sent out a notice yesterday trying to alert everyone to be sure that you had a chance to look at it. But beginning on page 14, or roughly thereof, of the report, there's a detailed chart called Detailed Implementation Analysis and Task Force Comments. And the chart takes the text of the task force recommendations and the amendments that were suggested by the implementation committee and provides a side-by-side column next to that text, which says whether or not the change of the implementation committee, whether they made a recommended change, and whether that was accepted in detail. So, for instance, and I think it's in the interest and respect for everyone's time, I don't want to bore you with reading to you what you obviously will have read in preparation for this council before, but as an example, in response to Roger, under one of the recommendations, the recommendation two, the suggested replacement text from the implementation committee is provided there, and then right beside it, it notes that we accepted that, and then the specific modification. So, for instance, I really don't know if it's a good use for me to walk the council, Roger, through each of these and read them to them.
Are there many? I'm sorry, Marilyn. I thought that there were not many instances in which there were changes from the implementation group. If there are quite a number, then it's probably not worth going through all of them. But are there a few that you think are significant?
Let me ask Jeff Newman, actually, from your constituency, to comment on the significance. I believe, and I'll characterize it as the task force tried to accept the spirit and as much of the content as possible from the implementation committee, but in a very few instances, in the insertion of the text into the report, felt the need to provide a few other edits, but not to depart in any way from the spirit and the intent of the implementation committee's report.
And yeah, I can certainly confirm, having been chair of that implementation committee, and I've gone through in detail those changes, and I felt that all the changes were basically from the implementation committee were accepted. There was more or less changes, I think, to improve the English and improve the reading in some parts, but it didn't change the sense. I might just call on Ross Rader to comment as well. Perhaps Ross and Jeff could both comment, because they were on the implementation committee, whether they're satisfied with the task force report.
Yeah, I think the only departure, this is Ross speaking, folks, the only real departure that we made from the recommendations of the implementation committee were in recommendation number 24, where rather than accepting the request to replace a recommendation that we previously made, we instead chose to merge the two recommendations into one recommendation. But other than that, it was largely dot the I's, cross the T's, and make it readable. So,
This is Jeff Newman. I agree with Ross. Most of the changes were, as you said, dotting the I's, crossing the T's. There was a... we're looking at the newest version. I think there was an old version that was posted by accident for a few days. But looking at the new version, the newer version that was actually posted, the corrected version, that actually had very little changes.
Okay, I think that answers my question.
And again, let me just, for clarity for everyone on the council, the chart we referenced, then that language is then embedded in a marked up form in the rest of the recommendations in an effort to try to make it easier for you to understand how the report looks after those changes are incorporated.
Hi, Eric. Sorry for the delay.
This is John.
Joining us, Eric. Are there any other questions on the Transfer Task Force report?
This is John.
I'd like to clarify some points concerned with the Hill Task Force report.
No, we're not. We're not.
I remember.
So we're just dealing with the transfers report at this stage, John. We're still on.
Now we are talking about the implementation groups, groups works. So I'd like to make some comment and clarify some points.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
When we decided on the composition of the implementation committee, we have talked about the necessity of that implementation committee because in practice our recommendations should be materialized, and at that stage it could have many problems. So we wanted to confirm those problems and also to suggest some more clarification or progress in our recommendations. So I think that implementation committee did a good job. Then, in my memory, I think during that term, up to this time, in the process of implementation committee's works, the task force, whose task force work is going on. So up to now, they could review the whole recommendations of whose task force, so they could discuss on many debate points. And one of those participants from non-commercial constituency raised some questions, and it was very significant. So I think it is very valuable comment, and it's also reflecting our constituency's position. So I think, is it right, during that term of the implementation committee's works, our comment and our discussion of that task force is going on? Can I confirm that, Marilyn?
I'm sorry, John. I want to be clear what I'm responding to right now. We're discussing the transfers task force report. And I just need to clarify if you're asking me a question about the who is task force or the transfers task force.
Yeah,
we'll take that question later. We'll note the question and we'll ask Marilyn to answer when we come to the who is task force.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to do is just complete this phase on transfers. I just want to remind everyone of what we're doing at this point. At this point, we are voting to recommend that the final report of the transfers, the transfers final report, be forwarded on to the board as a board report. The process for doing that is we need to vote on the report, and what we're looking for here is a supermajority vote, in other words, greater than 66% in favour, and that will then mean that it is a consensus position. Alternatively, if it is just passed by a majority, then it is up to the board to decide how they want to deal with that, but it is not formally a consensus position. So at this point, we would be voting to try to achieve a consensus vote. And in this voting, the registries and registrars have two votes each, and the other constituency members have one vote each. Another point of clarification at this stage I'd like to seek from Marilyn, and that is that in forwarding this report to the board, whether we have included a period of time that would be necessary to implement the policy. Has that been made clear in the report?
No, it has not, and that is something that we are actually, I think, unable to do without consultation with the ICANN staff. It would be my recommendation that the council ask the ICANN staff to prepare to go forward with the report an estimate of the time that it would take to implement.
Okay, I think that estimate would require some... an estimate from the ICANN staff, but probably also an estimate from registries and registrars in terms of time taken to make software changes.
I agree with that. I think the task force would broadly agree with that, and Jeff and and Ross should comment on this. In our discussions, I think our feeling was that the process should involve the ICANN staff in consultation with the contracted parties to try to determine what a implementation period could be.
Okay, so that would be something that will be forwarded to the ICANN board prior to the next meeting then?
Might we ask Louis if that is a reasonable expectation to, and certainly the task force, and I'm sure the implementation committee, Bruce, I don't mean to speak for that group, but I'm sure that the task force and the implementation committee would be happy to consult with the ICANN staff to try to that additional step in place to go forward.
Just to respond on that, if I might. The implementation, as Marilyn and Bruce have just pointed out in their discussion, involves not only time for the contracted parties to technically implement, but also questions regarding the legal structure, that is, the contracts that are involved. Some changes, and I'm not sure it's true in the case of transfers, may require filtering down through renewing or revising, you know, all of the 180 agreements we have with registrars, which could take up to 5 years. But so, getting an assessment of that is that second point. In responding to Bruce's call for an estimate of time, will take some appreciation of how particular parties stand on renewing their contracts or revising their contracts.
Louis, it's Marilyn. I'd like to ask a question about that. Would a party be able to voluntarily make this change if their contract were not up for renewal otherwise?
Yeah, hi, Alana. It's Ken Stubbs. I tried to reach
you. Hey, Ken, you're talking on an open line.
Excuse me.
I'd have to look at the details, Marilyn.
Okay.
I note that in the implementation committee report, in one of the tables, he said that time would be required to reach full compliance, 3 months from a registrar point of view, and the registries have noticed that software changes may take up to 6 months from the initial specification, software development, testing and deployment. But I would recommend that we forward with the report an estimate, at least at the technical side, of between 3 and 6 months, and it's just an estimate that this will be fine in consultation with is that acceptable?
That would sound accurate to me.
Okay.
Wait, 3 to 6 months with the 3 months for the registrars and the 6 months for the registries to overlap.
Yep. Okay. Now what I'd like to do is move to a formal vote on this transfers report. And given the significance, I would like to go through members of the council to lodge their votes individually. So I'll start, and if someone's got a proxy for this person, let me know. But I'll start with Shepherd. Is Stephen on the line?
This is Steve. Alex,
this is Dan Steinberg.
Okay, is Philip Shepherd on the line?
Yes, I am.
Philip, how do you vote on this report?
Take me in a moment. I've only just joined.
Okay. What we're doing, Philip, is
I understand the nature of the vote, but I'll just listen in and then vote.
Okay. Marilyn?
I vote in support.
Okay, Grant Forsyth.
I have his proxy. He votes in support.
Okay, Pichetti.
Yes.
Okay, Terry.
Yes.
Jordan.
I vote in favor.
Tony Harris.
I vote in favor.
Holmes?
I have Tony Holmes as proxy, and he votes in favor, too.
Okay, Greg Ruth?
In favor.
Chun?
I support, and Harold, my proxy, is also support.
Thank you, Chun. Eric?
I support.
Ken Stubbs?
I support.
Okay, Philip Gravenzi?
I have Philip's proxy, and he votes to support.
Thank you. And I will vote to support. Philip Shepherd?
I support.
And...
Yes, I support it. I've got the proxies for Ellen and Jay Scott. And it's yes as well. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you. So on that basis, then, it is unanimous support. And it is 24 votes carried for that motion. So that does make it a consensus policy. And we will forward that on to the board for its meeting in March. And I'd like to thank particularly at this stage the chair of the Transfer Task Force for the effort in getting us to this stage. It's been a lot of effort. And I'd also like to thank individually one member of that task force being Ross Rader, who has also put a huge amount of effort into editing the document. And to all the other members of the task force that I know have spent literally thousands of hours on this transfers and nearly all of it voluntary time, most likely at night or on weekends. So we do acknowledge the voluntary work that has gone into to producing this consensus position.
And can I, Bruce, just join you in thanking several of the members of the transfers task force did join, and I do want to particularly thank all of them for the thoroughness of their work and the, at one point, just so the council knows this, the Transfers Task Force was meeting twice a week for 2 hours at a time. It was a terrific contribution of everyone's time. And also, I think we owe the community a vote of thanks for their participation and their active participation in this through the comment process. And the registrars and registries who, in Shanghai, pulled together and had a consultation with the task force with very short notice. I don't know if anyone else on the task force would like to say anything, but I would then announce to the council that having concluded our work, we would expect to be banding the task force in the next few hours, I would expect, Bruce.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. I'd like to, given the time constraints, move on to the next topic, which is who is. To run through the who is, in our meeting in December, there was no decision made on the recommendations of the who is task force in the meeting in December, but it was decided to form an implementation committee to analyse those recommendations. That implementation committee consisted of the registry, a number of registries and registrars. It also included two members of the Who Is Task Force, which was Steve Metallitz and Thomas Ross. And we also had a representative from the non-commercial constituency, which was, and I'll probably get this name wrong, but it was Ruchiga Agrawal. The committee was focused purely on the recommendations related to see that involved the registrars and registries, and also the issue with the implementation committee report concluded that some of the recommendations were not implementable in their current form, but suggested who's working that would make those recommendations implemented. Then the WHOIS task force met and the implementation committee report and also considered other public comments that were received between the meeting in December and the present time, and produced an update of the WHOIS task force report. Now, we've had a question from Chun regarding the process of how the comments from the non-commercial constituency were included during this process. So I'll hand over to Marilyn or Tony Harris to respond.
Let me start with a response, but first of all, again, if I might, can I just ask if you are a member of the WHOIS task force, if you would identify yourself, please, so that the if you're not on the council, so that the council knows who else has joined them.
This is Steve Metallitz.
This is Richika Agrawal.
Thomas Breslow.
That's terrific. Let me start with a question to Chun to be sure that I am answering the question he asked. Is the question about the input of the non-commercial constituency into the implementation committee process, or about the inclusion of the non-commercial constituency contribution in the work of the task force overall and in the final report?
Maybe I'm not so sure whether our representative did participate in the process positively. We didn't get any report from her. We had only one report from her task force, whose task force was.
I'm sorry, Chun. You did not get a report from the non-commercial constituent representative?
With regard to the work of the implementation committee.
I see. So your question, okay. So the question is about the process of the WHOIS task force and the final report.
My question is about, we had already organized the implementation committee, and then up to their recommendations of implementation committee, we postponed any decision on WHOIS task force recommendations. So I think even up to this time, we can get and collect here many opinions on WHOIS task force recommendations. Is it right?
The purpose of this call is to have discussion about the recommendations by the council, yes.
Yeah. I'd like to clarify that. Because the implementation committee is simply its main goal is to review what's the problem and the implementation process. So its role is extremely limited. But our main concern is the main substance of recommendations of the WHOIS task force report. So my concern is we have still something to discuss on at those points in WHOIS recommendations.
Then I think what we should do, Bruce, do you want to, shall we just go to Chun's discussion point, or do you want us to provide any kind of an overview of the report?
I think at this stage it's probably worth responding to the minority position that the non-commercial constituency has raised. As I understand, the non-commercial constituency has raised a minority position within the task force that relates to the need to take into account privacy considerations.
That's right.
Now, privacy was not...
Can I say more? I'd like to clarify our point as a non-commercial constituency. Because basically, this recommendation of WHOIS task force report is based on some assumptions that I say from the outset, the task force acknowledged the more understanding and necessity of understanding about privacy issues concerning the food database is extremely needed. That kind of necessity was perceived and recognized by all task force members in their task force. Then most people thought the understanding of privacy issues is extremely limited, so such issue reports was postponed. It could be dealt with after the WHO's task force reports recommendations has worked out. That was the basic assumption, and we are talking about the adoption of this recommendation. Then, throughout those discussions and the task force, our representative of the non-commercial constituency discovered and confirmed that some kind of issue of privacy is very closely related with the accessibility issue. So now we are suggesting some recommendations on access and the accuracy of personal data in WHO's database. Then this kind of policies is closely related with, directly related with the privacy issues. So without understanding and confirmation of the real issues of privacy, we cannot consider, we cannot take into account the adoption of accessibility policy at this stage. That is the basic point. So I think the task force report and recommendations is basically based on some assumptions, but those assumptions have faced some problems, and that was challenged by our constituency member. So I think her dissenting opinion is very crucial in its substance. So of course it is called as minority report, minority opinion. Nevertheless, it is very challenging, very deeply to the substance of those recommendations. That is what I want to say just now.
Bruce, I think that, thank you, Chen, for that. I would like to respond, Bruce, about the perception that I have as a co-chair, and then ask my co-chair and any other member of the task force to respond, because I think this is an important question, and that important question is, what were the assumptions that the task force was working from? Having been co-chair of the task force now from the time that Paul Payne was chair, and through the process of analyzing the questionnaire and of taking ongoing input and discussing with the task force in detail what the assumptions were they were operating under, I think that it's important to clarify that the task force decided, based on a recognition of the need to do more work in privacy, that they would do some work now on privacy, on accuracy, and on bulk access, and they would take into account in that work the issue of privacy. Certainly in our addressing bulk access, the concern the task force had was misuse of the data and the possibility of the data being sold or used in ways that the registrant did not concur with because of concerns about privacy. In the recommendation that we make on consensus policy, we originally, in our earlier report, had a, when we put out our interim report, we had a much more extensive possible list of recommended policies. Based on feedback within the task force and from the community, the task force pared that back considerably and tried to narrow our recommendation to those that are achievable now and that can take into account the concerns that have been identified about possible privacy problems as well as other problems, but also taking into account the feedback from the community about the harm that is caused to registrants by inaccurate data. Inaccurate data also harms the registrant if they are not able to be reached by their registrar and they're in danger of losing their registration. But we tried to balance in our recommendation and not impose new and additional demands other than to ask the registrars to remind the registrants of the need to provide data and to ensure that the redemption grace period would be applied if a registrant lost their registration due to inaccurate data. They could lose that registration due to inaccurate data because they didn't respond and their registration lapsed. So the task force was trying to take into account the concerns that Chun has mentioned and that were raised within the task force by Buchica and by other members of the task force and by the community. We also took into account the feedback we received that the misuse of data via port 43 is an issue of concern. We addressed it not in our consensus policy recommendation because we did not have consensus with the community, but we identified it and documented it as something that needs to be addressed in the next round of work. So I would say that respecting the feedback that Ben has given us, I believe the task force, in fact, was trying to be cognizant of the privacy issues in the limited recommendations they have put forward.
Okay, I think perhaps if we can just get Tony Harris to respond as well.
Well, actually, I think Marilyn has summed it up pretty well. I've been looking at some of these last-minute concerns which have been raised with such emphasis. And perhaps I have a defect in my upbringing, but I was always taught that it's a sin to tell a lie, and if you're going to hide your identity, I mean, why are you getting a domain name? It's the first thing that that comes to mind for me. Regarding our privacy laws, the one in Argentina, for instance, prohibits databases of personal people's data unless the person expressly authorizes this to be published. So in Whois, I mean, if somebody buys a domain name, a solution to that would be if you buy a domain name, you're going to be listed, and this is a condition you have to accept. I mean, these are just some reflections. As far as the allegations that people's lives are in danger, well, that seems a little far-fetched. I mean, there are public rights organizations who would be happy to harbor these people who want freedom of speech and don't want to be detected by their governments. I mean, they can get a subdomain with any of these human rights organizations. I'm just making these points because I believe these comments were very, very stressful of these terrible impacts on suffering people.
Would some other members of the task force like to respond? I think there was Thomas and Steve Metallitz on the call. Would you try to keep the responses fairly brief because time is limited? But Thomas, did you have a comment?
Well, my comment would be that from my point of view, the working assumptions throughout the last part of the work of the task force was certainly that privacy issues and further policy making on bug access would be treated by the GNSO with relative priorities and would happen relatively soon. I think that was, if I may put it like that, the implicit deal to moving ahead with what we call the low-hanging fruit on accuracy and bug access and deferring other topics to issues reports, which, as you know, are expected to be prepared by the task force before Rio.
Okay, Steve Metallitz.
Excuse me, Bruce, this is Roger, just for a minute to interrupt. I have to sign off, and I will come back on in a few minutes. If any votes take place, I give my proxy to Gordon or Kerry in that sequence, and I'll rejoin shortly.
Thank you, Roger.
This is Steve Metallitz. I don't have a strong feeling. If the issue is how is the non-commercial constituency statement characterized in the report. I don't have a strong feeling about that. And, you know, I'm not going to go into the merits of it as Tony did, but just to say that this constituency has been invited to participate throughout the history of the task force. There were at least, I could think of, 6 or 8 prior occasions on which dissenting opinions were discussed. We've issued at least 3 documents that have been called final report, and yet this opinion came out after the final, you know, 2 weeks after the final report was issued. So I think it's very difficult to respond on the merits in that circumstance.
Okay.
Bruce, can I add something?
Yes. Who's speaking?
It's Laurent. No, I just would like to echo Tony's comments, because I think they were, he was absolutely right in the way he presented some of the basic elements regarding the WHOIS. And also the fact that I'm a little bit concerned personally that we received those comments so late, whereas the work has begun really a year ago. And that I was really wondering whether the non-commercial constituency had been regularly informed by his representative in the WHOIS task force of the work and of the discussions, because really this really surprised me a lot.
This is Ruchika from the WHOIS task force. May I have a chance to comment?
Yeah, and this is Ken Stubbs. Would you put me in the queue after Ruchika, please?
Yeah, go ahead, Ruchika.
So I want to divert our attention to the substantive policy issues in question now. The key intuition to have is that enforcement of accuracy of WHOIS data has serious implications on privacy. Domain name registrants have legitimate reasons for providing inaccurate WHOIS information, for example, to protect their privacy and to protect their personally identifiable information from being globally publicly accessible, and especially when we don't have privacy safeguards in place. So as a way to move forward, the non-commercial constituency is simply asking that the enforcement of accuracy is concurrent with insurance of privacy safeguards. I think that's pretty reasonable. And the non-commercial constituency has consistently raised privacy issues since the first interim report was published.
Okay, so what you would require is that before the accuracy policy was implemented, that a new policy would be required to deal with privacy, or new recommendations to deal with privacy. Is that what I'm hearing?
That privacy issues are resolved and appropriate privacy safeguards are implemented at the same time, yes.
Thomas here. I'm sorry if I'm stepping in, but I'd like to make sure that everybody is talking about the same thing, really. The report of the WHOIS task force has two very different things on accuracy. First, there are recommendations on consensus policies. That's one consensus policy on sending regular reminders to registrants. There are no sanctions tied to that policy. There is a second policy which talks about the way in which the redemption grace period should be applied to domain names which are deleted in process of some accuracy complaint. That these are consensus policies identified in the task force's report. There are other recommendations from the task force that existing policy should be enforced in a more stringent way, and there is a process proposed by which this could happen. And I just want to make sure that both Bruce and Ruchika are in agreement about which part of the report you are talking.
Yeah, I think the issue is the concern. I might add, too, there's a difference between accuracy and display of data. And the WHOIS report is only dealing with the issue of accuracy, not the display of the data. And it's the display of the data that raises privacy issues. If the data is accurate and not displayed publicly, that is not a privacy issue. So I think accuracy and privacy are two very different things. And privacy is related to the display of data, not to the accuracy data.
Exactly. Bruce?
I
think was next in line.
Bruce?
Yes, go ahead, Ken.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I next in line or what?
Yes, you are. Yes, you're after
yes.
Richard.
Actually, you stole a lot of my thunder. That's the point I was going to make as well. But the point I would like to make was as well that all of this work that we've been doing on the WHOIS task force has always been predicated on the assumption
that once this issue is dealt with and moved forward, that we will be addressing privacy issues on a very timely basis. I'm in Washington right now at the FTC hearings, and I've had discussions this morning with many Europeans who are very concerned about these issues. So all I'm looking for is assurances that we will be moving forward on the privacy issues. But I firmly feel, as you have just mentioned, that we're dealing with two distinct animals here. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the issue with the who is that it's a very large topic area, and all we can do really is break it down into components and solve each component. The accuracy is one component that we have some recommendations that have support for on the basis of accuracy. What I would suggest is that privacy is obviously an issue of importance to individual users and to the non-commercial constituency. The privacy and the display of data is also of issue to registrars and registries because there is a perception that data is being misused for marketing by the public three whois, as distinct from the bulk whois. What I would recommend is that we put an agenda item for the council meeting in March to consider the formation of a policy development process on privacy, and the requirement for that agenda item will be an issues report, which I believe the whois task force is working on. And even if the whois task force does not produce such an issues report, the non-commercial constituency is most welcome to create their own issues report, and that will be discussed for commencing policy development on privacy at the GNSO Council meeting in March. That's what I would propose as a way forward. At this stage, I think I'd like to on the. Would anyone else like to speak on any other aspect of the Who Is Task Force report?
This is Chan. Can I speak more?
Yes, go ahead, Chan.
Yeah, basically I think there could be some progress on Who Is Task Force report and their recommendations, basically to remove the bulk access to Who Is database is a very good sign. We welcome that, and also to narrow down the scope of our recommendations is also very wise, I think. Basically, those very cautious approach is very welcomed, but the problem is when I remember the atmosphere of our NIMS Council meeting in Shanghai, the whole participants in our NIMS Council agreed that privacy issue is very important in Who Is database, and also there is some trade-off between privacy and data accuracy. So we know the real implication of privacy in Who Is database accuracy issues. You have just mentioned, Bruce, you have just mentioned that accuracy is quite different from the privacy issue itself, because it is simply meaning the accuracy of personal data information. But we are accepting the reality that acknowledge and recognize the intentional inaccuracy of personal data information in Who Is data. So such a custom is prevailing in the market, and people is thinking it is one instrument to protect their own privacy. So accuracy is closely related with the privacy issue itself. So we cannot get rid of this implication in accuracy policy and with database. So I think even in our NIMS Council, the trade-off relations between two elements recognized. Then the problem is just now we are separating two stages. The first stage is accuracy. The second stage is issue reports, including privacy issues. Then there is some ambiguity between two stages. Now we are talking about the accuracy policy, accuracy recommendations in who is. Then next stage we will talk about issue policies, issue reports, including privacy. Then what's the relationship between two? There could be some intercontradictory elements. In that case, how can we resolve this problem? Now we want to adopt our recommendation regarding the accuracy. Then if later privacy issue is coming up again, we should review the accuracy issue again. Then how can we resolve this contradiction?
I don't think there's a problem, Chun, in that if the privacy process has implications to the accuracy process, then the accuracy recommendations can be changed. I mean, these recommendations are not set in stone forever. At any point, you can change any of the recommendations via consensus policy. So in the process of analysing privacy, if there is an aspect or a way that you would suggest the accuracy recommendations be changed, then they can be recommended at that time as a consensus policy.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. Can I get in the queue to explain something?
Yeah, and Jordan as well, actually.
Let me clarify something that I said earlier, or let me restate something I said earlier. The task force is preparing three issues reports. One of the issues reports is on privacy. A second issues report is on uniformity and consistency of data elements and searchability, and I will just preview to the council that the thinking of the task force, I don't know if Ram Mohan is on at this time, the thinking of the task force is that further work on that area, because it has privacy implications, should be moved out, and there should be an effort to watch and participate in the standards process, but not to undertake consensus policy in those areas at this time. The third issues report will be the consideration of further work on accuracy with the recognition that further work would only be undertaken with that understanding that the examination of the privacy issues is going on as well. So I think I just want to be clear that we are not recommending that this is the end-all, be-all of work on accuracy. In fact, we are trying to say this is a small step. There are no sanctions in this. This is an effort to help the registrants as well. Without dwelling on this, not all data is inaccurate on purpose. And that is something that we have to understand, and some people are harmed, and they want to have accurate data so they can be contacted, so they can renew their registration, and they have inaccurate data because it's aged. I don't want people thinking on the council that the task force is assuming that the privacy work would not be intricately linked with any further policy work, because of course we do think that, and we think that if, to the point you made, Bruce, if a policy, if a privacy issue that affects these recommendations is identified, that could be dealt with by the council.
Yeah, so thank you, Marilyn. Jordan?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think, first of all, I'd just like to start off by making a quick comment of that I think the task force has done terrific work, and I think that it's important that we don't derail the work of the task force by, via these privacy concerns. However, I think that these are not new concerns, and these are concerns that I've raised at, each of the last two times the Who Is Task Force has been raised, is that the issues of privacy and accuracy are integrally linked, that not only do privacy concerns become paramount once we start enforcing accuracy, but that I don't think it's likely that we're going to be able to get good enforcement of accuracy until such time that we have reasonable privacy provisions for those that do have legitimate privacy interests. So I think that the suggestion that Bruce made earlier with regards to rapidly initiating a policy development process is important. And I think also I think we may do ourselves some benefit by essentially codifying the statements that, that Marilyn just made in terms of the resolution that we use to adopt the task force's report and basically indicate that we do adopt these recommendations, but until such time as the privacy recommendations have been developed, that we ought not to mandate that these that the accuracy recommendations be applied to anyone. So they serve as guidelines and serve as a useful point at which we can go forward and start to provide users service in terms of providing the accuracy that they desire, but that we don't start to delete domain names and so on for people who do have legitimate privacy interests.
Okay. Any other council members wish to comment on the Who is Task Force report?
This is Roger. Only to reiterate the point that Jordan just made. I think that's a he's speaking for the.
Okay. So the suggestion then, Roger and Jordan, so I understand it, is that the that we would resolve to accept the recommendations of the Who is Task Force report. We would present the report to the board, but we would include a recommendation that the that these recommendations not become mandatory until the privacy policy development process is complete. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Bruce, I think the task force, I certainly would like to better understand this. Because, again, if I just point us to the consensus policy on accuracy, which is once a year, a registrar must present to the registrants the current information, remind them that the provision of false who is information can be grounds for cancellation, but it's the responsibility of the registrant to review their who is data and make any corrections. So do I understand that the registry constituency is suggesting the second part of this provides the redemption grace period, which is a safeguard for registrants should a name have been deleted. My understanding from conversations with registrars extensively in consultation with them on this issue and with the ICANN staff is that rarely are names deleted by the registrar for inaccurate data. In fact, the registrars make extensive patient efforts to try to reach their customers. So this provides a safeguard, but I hear the registry constituency representatives proposing that this not be, that the policy be presented to the board, but that it not be a binding policy. And I just need to understand that.
Correct. I think, Marilyn, that, well, first, two comments, both actually relate to the redemption grace period. And the first would be that, as my work as the chair of the of the deletes task force, some of the comments that we're seeing early on with regards to the use of the redemption grace period is that it's simply too expensive for registrants to rely upon. And I think we don't want to impose a large cost increase on registrants as their only fallback in terms of the who is deletion due to who is policy if in fact some legitimate privacy interest is not being served that causes the name to be deleted. And I would say further that yes, I would view my recommendation as being very much similar to the way that the redemption grace period was adopted, in which it was a policy that was essentially not obligatory for registries to implement, but that they could implement, and that when they did so, provided some useful benefit to the community.
I think what I would say. Can I suggest something?
Yes,
in this discussion, throughout this discussion process, I confirmed that there's some agreement here. In other words, there are some implication of privacy issue in who is accuracy policy is already confirmed among all people. So such an implication of a privacy within the policy of accuracy, such an element could be included in the first accuracy policy recommendation. I think it's okay. That's the first suggestion. Second suggestion is As Marilyn has already confirmed that if we can identify some problems in our accuracy enforcement mechanism by registrar has some problem, in that case it could be rectified again. Such conditions could be attached to our first recommendations. It could be acceptable.
Okay, so here's what I suggest. I think what I would suggest is that we resolve to accept this WHOIS report and transmit to the board that the in terms of the implementation timeframe, that we recommend that it not be implemented for a period of 6 months. And during that six-month period, there will be time to initiate the policy development process for privacy, and that if there are any issues that arise from that privacy development work, that the accuracy recommendations may be modified at that time.
Bruce, can I ask a question? It's Laurence.
Yes, go ahead, Laurence.
Maybe I'm stupid. I just don't understand the discussion, but I don't understand then what's the point of sending these recommendations to the board if they are not going to be implemented or if they are not binding. Can someone explain me that?
What is the timing of the recommendation, Laurence? That in the case, if you recall with the WLS issue, for example, the board recommended that VeriSign not implement WLS for a period of 6 months. After the implementation of the redemption grace period. So it was an example of a case where they are changing the timing of when something becomes binding as opposed to... So basically, we have the ability at this point to recommend to the board on timing of implementation, and what I'm suggesting is that the timing of implementation be set at 6 months. And basically what that would mean that unless there is any further input from privacy or any other area, it would become binding at that point after a six-month period. During that 6 months, though, there is the opportunity for the privacy policy development process to get initiated, and the council has the opportunity to change its recommendations. But at this point, we would be accepting those recommendations as they stand.
Bruce, may I ask for a clarification? I'm sorry.
And also Louis.
Yeah, and this is Jordan. Can I just jump in again after Louis?
Go ahead, Thomas.
You were just talking about adopting the report with a six-month delay. I would like to call, if I may, the Council's attention to the fact that there are also recommendations on bike access in this report, on which I believe there has been no dissent whatsoever. And I would like to caution that a blanket deferral of all recommendations would also cover the task force's bike access recommendations, and maybe some more granularity may be appropriate in deferring things if that's the way the council seeks to go.
It is possible to vote on these two issues separately. That's a good point.
This is Louis. To add, even to really reinforce Thomas's remark, I think other kinds of granularity or in finer grain are perhaps appropriate if you want it to be clear what the council is seeking to do. In addition to having two general issues as to which their consensus policies recommended in this report, there also is a good deal of other material that doesn't really relate to consensus policies and in some cases is, at least in my view, merely reaffirmation of existing policies. So while I hate to do anything to frustrate, Bruce, your efforts, I think, that are fairly remarkable to bring the council to consensus on this, I think, as Thomas has noted, or in line with what Thomas has noted, some additional specificity may be appropriate.
Okay. And who was after Louis?
Oh, sorry, that's Jordan.
Jordan?
Yeah, Bruce, I agree fundamentally with your notion, you know, with the further granularity, perhaps, that Thomas and Louis have implied, perhaps relating the timing to certain provisions. However, I do think it's important that the timing not just be set to a period of time, but that they be tied specifically to the completion of work on privacy. And if that work is done quicker than 6 months, there's no reason to keep waiting. And if it's done more slowly, then I think it's an issue that needs to be concerned before these provisions take effect.
Bruce, can I get in the queue? I have a question about that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is Roger. I have to interrupt again. I have to sign off again, and again, my proxy goes to Jordan. If for some reason I'm not able to rejoin before the budget stuff comes up, Bruce, I would ask you to deal with it. It's pretty straightforward. The council has discussed it before, so I doubt it will be controversial, but I will try to rejoin in time for the budget committee report.
Okay. Thank you, Roger.
Thanks.
Okay, Jordan?
No, I think Marilyn had a question, actually.
Yep.
I'm trying to really understand the scenario here for all of us. I want to be careful that we don't leap into an assumption that the reason that all data is inaccurate is because the individual purposely put in inaccurate data, either for a legitimate reason or for a non-legitimate reason. That is not the only reason that data is inaccurate. And I think one of the things that the issues report will try to identify is the different kinds of concepts here that we should be looking at and thinking about the mechanisms that enable someone who wishes to have accurate data to have accurate data. The question about bulk access and delaying dealing with both bulk access and Port 63 access, I think raises a very significant concern to me. While spam is, the creation of spam lists are not significantly contributed to by Whois definitely does contribute to the development of a third party list. And whatever small role it plays, it is a relevant role. And I think the feeling of the task force, based on input from the survey and the community, has been that they don't support marketing uses of the data, and they wish to see action move forward quickly to deal with that in order to address the privacy concerns. So I'm somewhat struck by a suggestion that we would postpone trying to deal with that issue in a positive and productive way.
Yeah, sorry, Marilyn. I think, first of all, the intent is not to stop dealing with either issue in a positive and productive way. It's quite frankly to accept in the entirety the recommendations of the report. However, with regards to consensus policy number one related to the accuracy of Whois data, to tie the mandatory nature of its implementation to the implementation of privacy. And that would be the extent of the proposal at this point.
Also note for the benefit, Jordan, that there is a requirement for accuracy already in the agreements. So the requirement for accuracy is not a new one. It is actually in the agreements.
Yeah, understood.
And that this task force is really just suggesting a process to improve the accuracy, which is including reminding the registrant that the data should be updated. So, and as Marilyn's pointed out, if a person, for reasons of privacy, did not do that, there's no actual sanctions in this policy, the actual agreement. So I think we just have to be, I accept the comments people have made, I think, particularly in relating to bulk access to Whois data. I think there is fairly clear consensus on that. The accuracy, I think it's important that it's recognised that accuracy is already in the contract, so we're not actually changing anything there. We are suggesting a process to improve the implementation of that accuracy requirement in the contracts. What we can certainly do, if the council wishes, is we can include wording in our resolution to say that the proposed changes to or the suggestions for improving the accuracy need to be considered in light of the privacy issues, but I'm a little bit reluctant to have an open period by saying when privacy gets resolved, because privacy may never get resolved to the satisfaction of members. It may not actually be possible to form a consensus position on privacy, so I'd caution against an open period. I think what I would suggest is that we put a delay in here of 6 months for the implementation of the requirements related to accuracy, but that we accept that the bulk access provisions are presented to the board for immediate action, and that we encourage the privacy process to consider any potential changes to the accuracy recommendations. And quite frankly, I can't actually see how that could be possible, because what we'd be looking at with privacy is additional recommendations. I can't see why you would change an accuracy recommendation. Accuracy is separate from privacy. The privacy recommendations may include the ability for a registrant to opt out of their data being available publicly. That's nothing to do with accuracy. It's a matter of how the data is displayed. Do we have any other comments on this issue?
Just one last comment from Laurence. I understand what you mean, but if we link privacy with accuracy, then we can even go further. Privacy is also linked with bulk access. I mean, if we look, follow this reasoning. So this is a reasoning I just don't really understand. And for me, the conclusion, if we follow this policy, is that we are going to delay the implementation of an essential policy and to wait for another, for a further policy. So this is not logical to me, but...
It's not what we worked for all these months.
Louis, I'd like to be in the queue.
Yes, go ahead, Louis.
I hate to harp on my clarity point, but looking at the consensus policies that are in the report, as Jordan has noted, there's two sets, one dealing with accuracy, one dealing with bulk access. They each have two parts. Most of the discussion is focused on the accuracy points. And the accuracy consensus policies, the first one simply says that annually the registrar should remind the registrant that false information can be grounds for cancellation of the domain name registration. And the second one simply says, and I should say that A is a new, that would be a new requirement on registrars that annually they provide a reminder to that effect. The second one has to do with when a name is deleted for inaccuracy, that it not be restored until the accurate data is provided, or until updated data is provided, actually. That one, seems to me probably is inherent in the structure in any event, but it seems rather surprising that the council has gotten off into a discussion about the linkage of privacy and accuracy when you're talking about these accuracy provisions that seem not earth-shaking, if I could characterize it that way.
Absolutely.
Thomas would like to get onto the queue.
Yeah. Go ahead, Thomas. Tony's cue.
Well, basically, was just going to underline Louis' point. While conceptually there certainly is a linkage between the way in which you enforce accuracy requirements and privacy issues in an environment where you have universal public access, that's a condition for this linkage to exist, I frankly cannot see the direct linkage between the two consensus policies on accuracy and privacy issues. And I hope that this has also been clear in the statement which I have submitted to the council very briefly before the call. I apologize for this on behalf of the ALA. The first recommendation on accuracy is basically to tell registrars to give registrants an opportunity to fix their data easily if they want to. If they don't want to fix their data, they can just do nothing, nothing will happen. To me, that's good customer service as an individual. The second recommendation, well, as Louis said, it is maybe inherent to the process, and it is certainly something which kicks in very, very late in the process, at a point which hopefully would not be reached in many cases anyway. And what it is saying is just this: the redemption grace period should not be used as a quick way out of whatever complaint mechanism is in place. So you can't just let your domain name lapse, somehow get money to the registrar, get your domain name reinstated and back into the zone file without updating data. That's what the second policy says. So you may wish to think about it.
This is Steve Metallis. Can I get in the queue, please?
Yes, I just have just before you go, Steve, I just have a question of clarification. The WHOIS implementation report had a sort of a suggested process for dealing with a complaint about WHOIS accuracy. That doesn't seem to be in the consensus policies that we're just talking about, A and B, under accuracy. I just want a clarification on where that more detailed suggestion relates. Is that just a suggestion and basically it's not a consensus policy? If I can just get clarification from perhaps Marilyn Cade on that.
I'm sorry, Bruce, I was away for just a minute. Would you repeat the
question? Bruce, perhaps I can respond because I was consulted on this. I believe that the provisions you're talking about are simply recommendations to registrars, not finding requirements in any way.
Yeah, we're talking about the recommendations under accuracy of WHOIS. It says registrars, accuracy of WHOIS data and review.
Yes.
Basically, I think the bit that I agree that if that was in a lot more detail about a process that could be used, and what you're saying, Louis, that becomes a recommendation to registrars as part of the ICANN guidelines, does it? The actual consensus policies are just that at least annually a registrar will remind the registrant, which is the first one. The second one is that when registrations are deleted on the basis of false contact data, the redemption grace period should be applied. And then there's the two recommendations about bulk access. So the actual consensus policies, I agree, I can't see anything there that could be an issue. The issue that I believe has been raised about the privacy concerns are more to do with processes for requiring the correction of the data. I think we just need, perhaps if I can just state for the benefit, what I'm going to do is put this to the vote and see where we end up. And the vote will be, and this is the consensus policies, and I'll read them out so everyone's clear. The first one is that at least annually a registrar must present to the registrant the current WHOIS information and remind the registrant provision of false WHOIS information can be grounds for cancellation. It doesn't say anything about doing cancellation. It is just merely a reminder of the existing policy. The second recommendation is that when registrations are deleted on the basis of submission of false data, the redemption grace period should be applied. It's not saying you must delete them. It's just saying when they are deleted, the redemption grace period should be applied. The areas relating to bulk access to WHOIS are the first one, use of bulk access WHOIS data for marketing should not be permitted. And the second one says that section 3.3.6.5 of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement currently describes an optional clause of registrar's bulk access agreements which disallows further sale or distribution of bulk WHOIS data. The use of this clause should be made mandatory. So those are the four consensus policy recommendations. At this stage, I'm going to put it to a vote. We've had a lot of discussion on it, and we'll see where the vote lies.
You're canceling the queue, Bruce?
Yes, okay. I am.
Bruce, are we voting just to accept those specific policies and not the rest of the report? Is that correct?
What we're accepting, Jordan, is that these are the consensus policy recommendations. And the report is discussion and guidelines. Louis has reported that he would include that in guidelines, which is much what you had said, Jordan, that you were seeking these to be guidelines for mechanisms for updating the WHOIS data. That is not the consensus policy recommendation. That is a set of guidelines for registrars.
Right, so I'm just trying to be clear on the motion exactly that we're voting on.
Well, the motion is to accept the WHOIS report. The WHOIS report only has those four consensus policy recommendations that I read out. The rest of the report is dealing with basically guidelines for registrars in implementing those recommendations.
And so with regards to our action to the board, what's the rest of the motion?
At this stage, I'm just, because I put consensus on the previous suggested wording, I want to first put this to a vote and see what the vote is.
Okay, certainly.
Hi, this is Harold Feld. Sorry to be joining so late.
Thanks, Harold.
So this motion is just to have the Names Council accept the report.
Yes, to accept the report, which includes those four consensus policies, which I had read out.
I just want to be sure I'll let them know that.
And Jordan, just to complete that, with respect to those four consensus policies, if the report were transmitted to the board and the board accepted them, they would in fact become binding obligations on providers to the extent, as we've discussed, they actually change anything at all.
Correct. Yeah, I just want to make sure that when we forward to the board, perhaps some language is some notion of what the Names Council is transmitting to them is conveyed.
Bruce, sorry, I mean, as being a French speaker, do you mean now that we have to vote on the report without any delay of implementation?
That is correct. Yes, that is what the vote I'm proposing. I'm putting it to a vote. We've had extensive discussion. I'm going to put it to a vote that we accept the report in its current form for transmission to the board, and note that the report includes census policy recommendations, and I've read those out, and I will include that in the motion in the minutes, those four consensus recommendations.
If we vote on the whole report?
We're voting on the whole report, yes.
Right. Bruce, just to your motion, we add, just in the minutes, just some clarification that the rest of the report is not intended to be consensus policy.
That's correct. Yeah, that's actually what's in the report already now that I'm reading the wording, but I'll clarify that in minutes, yes.
We did try to say that.
Great.
Yeah. Okay, I'd now like, is everyone clear on what I'm proposing as the motion?
Yes, we are. Let's call for the question.
Okay, I'm calling for the question. I'll now read the names. You're first, Philip.
Yes, I support.
Okay, Marilyn.
Yes.
Grant Forsyth.
Grant Burchett.
Roger Cicchetti.
I think I'm carrying Roger's proxy, so I'll vote yes.
Okay, Terry.
Support.
Jordan.
I vote yes.
Tony Harris.
I vote yes.
Tony Holmes.
He votes yes, too.
Greg Ruth.
Yes.
Chun.
Before I say, I'd like to confirm again. Is it simply guideline and not a consensus policy?
No, the consensus policy for... that I read out, which is that at least annually a registrar will remind the registrant, that's merely reminding the registrant, that they need to keep their data accurate. The second one is that if a domain is deleted, the redemption grace period applies, and the name would be put in registrar hold status until the registrant has updated their whois. The third one is the use of bulk whois data for marketing should not be permitted. And the fourth one, the registrar accreditation agreement should disallow further resale or redistribution of bulk whois data. So those are the four consensus policy recommendations. So I ask again, Sean, how do you vote?
No.
No? Okay. Again. Harold Feld?
No.
No. No. I have the proxy of Harold, Eric.
Okay, and Eric.
Eric, no.
No.
Eric, I'm actually on the call at this point, but I voted no.
Excuse?
This is Harold Feld. I actually did join
okay.
A few minutes ago, so I'm
okay.
Voting no.
That's okay. Ken Stubbs?
Yes.
Philip Grabenzi? Ken, have you got Philip's proxy?
Yes, I was waiting to see whether he was able to rejoin the call or not. Yes.
Sorry.
Philip.
I vote for the motion. Laurence?
Yes, I'm voting yes for the report, so okay.
Okay. Ellen Shankman, I believe you have her proxy.
Yes, I've got the proxy, and it's yes, and Jay Scott as well.
Scott. Yes. Okay.
What about Jay Scott?
Yes, Lauren voted for Jay Scott.
Yes, I've got his proxy.
Okay. Basically, I have 21 votes for the motion and 3 votes against the motion. So the motion is carried. Again, I like to thank the chairs of the WHOIS Task Force, which is Tony Harris and Marilyn Cade, for, again, the thousands or tens of thousands of hours that have gone into the work of the WHOIS Task Force report. I will put on the agenda for the next Names Council call, Council call, for a discussion on the privacy issue. I'd like to thank the members of the WHOIS Task Force for their work, especially responding very promptly to the input from the WHOIS Implementation Committee. Given the time, I'd like to move on very quickly to the remaining items on the agenda.
Bruce, this is John. I should leave just now, so I'll give my passage to Harold.
Okay, thank you, John. The next item on the agenda relates to... is Roger Cassetti on the line? Okay, there's a resolution that Roger has proposed, and I'll read the resolution. It's recognising that during the year 2000, AFNIC provided services to the DNSO, mainly consisting of hosting and operating the DNSO website, without any agreement or contract with the DNSO to do so. Recognising that in 2001, the DNSO Council, on advice from its Budget Committee, agreed to make a payment to AFNIC for these services of $60,000, pending the resolution of 3 administrative matters. Recognising that 2 of these administrative matters were resolved, but the 3rd, which provided for the transfer of ownership rights over any software developed by AFNIC during 2000, became the subject of a dispute between ICANN management acting as an agent for the DNSO. Recognising that this dispute has delayed the payments of the budgeted $60,000 and that the software in question is no longer used by the GNSO, the GNSO Council decides to immediately release the above-noted $60,000 in funds to AFNIC for the full settlement of payments for services provided to the DNSO during 2000. Now, this was presented at the last Council meeting by Roger, and I had asked for it to be put in this meeting so that people had time to consider it, and I propose, unless I have any discussion, to put it to a vote. So does anyone have any comments or discussion they'd like to make on the motion?
Bruce, this is Louis, if I can comment.
Yes,
I'm supportive of the motion. However, I would ask the Council's indulgence to allow Glenn to check back on the records and make a minor correction. I believe the amount is actually not $60,000, but somewhere between $59,000 and $60,000. Glenn, do you recall?
Yes, you're quite right, Louis. It's not $60,000 round. I can check that.
So perhaps the Council could just give Glenn leave to substitute a number between $59,000 and $60,000 that's appropriate.
Okay. We'll adjust that in the minutes. I'll just call for all those in favour to say aye.
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 Is there anyone against the motion? Are there any abstentions on the motion? Okay, the motion is carried unanimously. The next procedural item is in relation to the election for the GNSO board seats 13 and 14. The process is basically from today onwards there will be a 14-day period where members of the GNSO Council may nominate a candidate for election for seat 14. Following the 14-day nomination period, on the 6th of March, a 14-day email vote period will start, and the vote will be ratified at the GNSO Council meeting in Rio on the 25th of March. At that point, we will then know what geographic region the seat 14 has been allocated to. I will then allow a 7-day period for any additional nominations by members of the council, and this could be because their previous candidate is now ineligible due to their geographic location. There'll be a further 7-day period starting on the 26th of March to nominate any additional person as a candidate. And then there will be a 14-day email vote for seat 13 on the ICANN board starting on the 2nd of April, and that will be ratified at the GNSO teleconference on the 17th of April. Now, what I would like to see is that each nomination should address the selection criteria for ICANN directors that's included in the ICANN bylaws. And it's also, there were a couple of modifications to the process. One is that the vote requires a majority of members. And again, I just want to clarify this with Louis, that it also includes is there a requirement for the votes to be counted via the two votes per registry and registrars? Is that correct as well?
Yes, the votes should be counted in an equalized fashion. Current version of the bylaws in Article 10 does provide that a majority of the members, of all the members of the council, that is the heads, you've got, 18 members, so at least 10 members must be supportive, affirmatively supportive, of the prevailing candidate. I should say that the current version of the bylaws, and Philip has pointed out the inconsistency, and there are moves underway to correct the bylaws or to revise the bylaws in a way that would also equalize the counting of heads. A majority of the votes would have to be represented, in other words.
Okay.
Bruce?
So, yes?
Yeah, I have a question, and Louis on at the same time. Maybe you can answer it for me. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's my understanding, Louis, that no one can serve on the board and the nominating committee at the same time. Is that correct?
There, no, that is not correct. As stated, maybe you should ask your question more exactly.
Yeah, if someone is nominated by the DNSO in this election to represent them on the board, and that person is currently a appointee to the nominating committee, can that person serve on both bodies if that person is elected, or is that person even eligible to run for the board?
There is no prohibition in the bylaws, stated in the bylaws, of such dual service. I'm not also not aware that the nominating committee has composed any rules at this point that would prohibit that.
I was on the understanding that no one could serve on the nominating committee and the board at the same time.
No, okay. The prohibition, which is has been posted as a bylaw correction. Correct an omission in the new bylaws is that if one serves on a nominating committee, one cannot be selected by that nominating committee.
Okay, but you could be selected by the GNSO Council, which is different, so I guess that's the subtle difference there.
Yes.
I'd basically like to, again, unless there's any further discussion, put this proposed process to the vote. Is there any further discussion on this topic?
Philip here, just to clarify, I had had some discussions in terms of the understanding of the bylaws with Louis. I did not make a request for any subsequent change. I thought that the threshold of also requiring a majority vote for board member was a good requirement.
Yes, but that's
and that is the current provision in the bylaw.
And that is the basis under which we'll be conducting at least this vote. Is that correct, Louis?
Well, I don't know the timing of the vote. The bylaw revisions are up to be considered on next Tuesday by the board. I doubt you'll complete your vote before then.
So you're saying the board can approve a change to the bylaws next Tuesday, Louis?
Yes, it's a very minor change. To be specific, and I apologize to council members that this is probably much more detailed than you really wanted to know. There is a provision in the bylaws about essentially the quorum of vote for the selection of an ICANN director by the GNSO Council. As currently written, it says that the affirmative votes of a majority of all members of the GNSO Council must be cast for the selected party. The matter under revision is to change that so it reads that a majority of the votes of all members of the GNSO Council must be cast for that party.
Okay. That clears one of my questions up before. Well, we'll clarify that before the voting starts. That will be clarified. The next 14 days will be for nominating candidates, so I will post the clarification, or Louis can post the final resolution on that. I don't believe this changes the procedure. It's really just changing the way the votes are counted when we start the voting process in 2 weeks' time.
Well, and I, just to be clear, there's no change in the way the votes are actually counted. It's just how many, just this quorum requirement.
Right, okay. So if I can again have a vote on this issue, all those in favour of the current process say aye.
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 Are there anyone against? Any abstentions? Okay, then this process will start as of today. So there is now a 14-day period for nominating a candidate for the GNSO positions on the board. So that and Glenn will send out a reminder, I imagine. So, final matter that I wish to raise at this point is the matter of the GNSO chair. The GNSO chair is due to be my current term began in September last year. There was a council meeting at the end of December stating that that my term would continue until March of this year, or unless a successor is found. The issue is, I guess, whether we wish to run a vote in parallel with the GNSO board vote, or whether we wish to wait until the council, unless we wish to wait until the board members are selected and that voting process is complete before we run a vote for the GNSO chair. I leave it open to people to perhaps comment on this at this point.
It's Marilyn. Can I get in the queue? I'll go ahead and speak, and then maybe anyone else can comment. I would prefer that we maintain the consistency of the present chair until after those other votes are taken care of. It seems to me that we have a lot of work on our plate, a busy agenda coming up in March. We have some things that we have to accomplish in a short time frame, including approval of the new procedures for the council. And it would be helpful to have this continuity and not be focused on an election and a vote at this time, it seems to me.
I'd like to
thank
you, too.
May I speak as well?
Go ahead, Tony Harris.
Yes, just confirming what Marilyn said, you may come up with a situation where we elect a chair who is also elected as a board member.
This is Harold Feld. If I can just got to sign off real quick my proxy to Eric.
Bruce, would you put me in the queue, please?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Can I be heard?
Yes, yes, we can.
Yeah. I want to express some concern over one thing that I'd like to hope, as we're talking about this, we can use as a guideline. Bruce and anybody who's been working in the, has worked in the chair position, the Names Council, really needs a significant amount of additional support. Gwen has been doing a marvelous job in supporting the council up to date, but I think we need to look at the possibility over the next few months of enhancing the support being provided to the Names Council and to the Names Council chair. So I'm going to propose that we consider the possibility that we kick up the support function and somehow enhance that, either by giving Gwen additional resources, because this is really getting to be an incredibly trying job for anyone. And I want to compliment you, Bruce, on the excellent job that you've done to date. I know how hard it's been for you and Marilyn and Tony and the people there, and we really need that additional support now. I don't see how we can wait 5-6 months. Thank you.
Okay, that's noted. Any other comments? Okay, well, what I'll leave it at this stage is that we won't contemplate a GNSO chair election until we've completed the election for the board seats at the ICANN level. But, of course, anyone is welcome to challenge that or suggest a process if they think any differently on the council list. At this point, I'll close the call. We've managed to run on time. And thank you for...
Bruce?
Yes, sir.
Let's just wait on. I just was wondering what's the way to proceed on Wendy's and my liaison functions?
Yeah, I think that starts pretty much straight away, doesn't it, Thomas?
I would hope so. I was just hoping for a yes from you.
Yes, it does, yes.
Okay, good. So I will tell ALAC that it's fine with you that Wendy serves on the GTLD work. Or do you want to contact with the full council on that?
Yeah, well, I guess that's to be communicated to Philip, but I posted the ALAC posting to the council list with all that information on there.
Okay.
So, yes, that is true. Wendy can join the GTLD committee.
So she basically, technically, that would mean that she joins the council list and only speaks up on GTLD matters. Right.
Yeah, I'll arrange that with Glenn. Can you send me an email just to remind me, and I'll.
Will do. I will send a brief note to Alex that things are fine with you.
That'll be good. Thanks, Thomas.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Bruce. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.